coming up on this week's mini episode of the Broken Brain Podcast.
EGCG has anti-cancerous properties because it's anti-angiogenic, meaning that it can prevent the growth of blood vessels to a cancer cell so that cancer can't grow.
Hi, everyone. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by my new venture and our newest protein powder, the Pegan Shake. One of the best ways to boost your brain power is with the best nutrition. This is why Dr. Mark Hyman and I teamed up to create the perfect shake to start your morning off right and set your brain and body up for vitality and success. The shake is called the Pegan Shake, and it features a combination of grass-fed collagen, organic pumpkin, and organic pea protein powder with healthy fats from MCT oil and avocado oil, which, by the way, are great for fat burning and fueling brain power as well. A little bonus, the Pegan Shake also features organic acacia fiber, which is great for gut motility and digestion. See, the shake was created to support healthy blood sugar and healthy energy levels. In fact, one of the most common reasons for mood imbalances and brain challenges come from unbalanced blood sugar. Have you ever felt anxious, tired, and wired, and then ate something and felt better? Well, when your blood sugar goes through major fluctuations throughout the day, you literally can feel crazy. I know so many people can relate. So the Pegan Shake supports your blood sugar by feeding your body the right information from this perfect combination of macronutrients. I've been using the Pegan Shake for months, and I feel full, satisfied, satiated, focused, and most importantly, I avoid those energy slumps that come in the late afternoon too. I think you're gonna love this shake. Dr. Hyman and I teamed up to make it because we literally couldn't find a shake mix that we loved. So we decided to create it ourselves. Check it out at getpharmacy.com/pegan shake. You can find the link in the show notes. That's getpharmacy, pharmacy with an F, pharmacy.com/pegan shake. Now on to today's episode. Hi, everyone. Drew Prode here, host of the Broken Brain Podcast. For hundreds of years, cancer has been portrayed as a foreign invader that we've been powerless to stop. But our understanding of cancer is slowly undergoing a revolution, allowing for the development of more effective treatments. For the first time ever, the death rate from cancer is showing a steady decline, but the quote-unquote war on cancer has hardly been won. My guests on today's mini episode of the podcast are Dr. Jason Fung and Dr. Elizabeth Boehm, and they talk to us about the seed and soil analogy of cancer and how the seed of cancer may exist in all of us, but the power to change the soil is in our hands. They also talk to us about hyperinsulinemia and how it may enable the development of cancer and how we can build a soil that offers cancer a hostile environment as opposed to a fertile one. That's what we want to do in our body. We want to make our body a hostile environment for cancer, and that's what we're talking about on today's episode. Let's listen in, starting with my interview with Dr. Jason Fung, a physician, author, and researcher. His groundbreaking science-based book about diabetes and obesity, the diabetes code and the obesity code, and the complete guide to fasting have sold over 1 million copies. His latest book, The Cancer Code, a revolutionary new understanding of a medical mystery, was just released at the end of 2020. You use this sort of seed and soil, you know, analogy. And I'd love to set that up just to make sure that we get to that while I have you here.
Yeah, so that's exactly right. So if we understand now, this is an evolutionary process which goes back towards our origins, then you have to say, what drives evolution? And it's not just genetics. So if you think about evolution, Darwinian evolution, which is the survival of the fittest, for example. So what he had observed was that in the Galapagos Islands, he had these birds. And if they had these short beaks, which were really ideal for eating nuts, and there are birds that these had these long beaks that were really good for eating fruit. And in the areas where there's a lot of nuts, you found a lot of these short-beaked animals, and where the areas you had a lot of fruit, you had a lot of these long-beaked animals. And that what he said was that's not a coincidence. What happens is that the environment selects the genes that are most successful. So if you have a lot of nuts, you select for the genes, that's a selective pressure, which favors the survival of those genes that produce the short, thick beak. And the areas that have a lot of fruit have exert a selective pressure on the genes that give you the long, narrow beaks, right? That makes sense. It's just sort of basic evolution. And cancer does sort of the same thing. So if it's an evolutionary process towards this sort of original being caused by chronic damage to the cell, then it's not the genetics, which is the important part, but it's the environment, right? And that is, the seed of cancer is there, but if you don't provide that environment that, you know, selects for this sort of survivalist, cancerous sort of, you know, story, then you're not going to get cancer. So you, what you have to do then is to say, this is not just a genetic disease, because for years we've been sort of thinking about it as a genetic disease. So we think, well, it's just sort of pre-programmed into us, but it's not, because the rates of cancer depend on your environment more than it does on your genes. That is, if you look at, say, breast cancer, if you go from Japan, a Japanese woman in Japan, when you move that person to San Francisco, their rate of breast cancer like doubles or triples within a couple of generations.
Crazy.
It's not genes. It's the environment. But that's fantastic, because then if you can figure out what part of the environment is what's selecting for the damage. So, in some cases we know it's smoking, it's tobacco, it's viruses, right? In many cases, we don't know. Breast cancer, colon cancer, what's the damage? Prostate cancer, we don't know. There's, if we can figure out what part of the environment is driving this evolutionary process, then that's how we're going to reduce the risk of cancer. And so the question is, what is it in our environment? So they've studied this question for a long time. So back in 1981, they did a study where they're going to estimate the risks. So we do something called a population attribution factor, which is what percentage a certain risk factor will contribute to cancer. So tobacco smoke is the biggest, 35%. So tobacco is responsible roughly for 35% of cancer overall. But number two was the diet at around 30%, right? So really, like, very, very close to tobacco and dwarfing almost everything else. So all the stuff like the pesticides and the chemicals and stuff, that's like 1 or 2%, radiation, 1 or 2%. But cancer was caused in large part due to, one, tobacco, which we know about, and two, the diet. The question
which is, never really got that, like, people didn't get that, you know, like,
people didn't,
they didn't get it that.
And so they were looking for what part of the diet. That was what the tricky part was. So if it's diet, then what part of the diet is causing cancer, right? So they looked at fiber, wasn't the case. They looked at dietary fat, it wasn't the case. They looked at vitamin deficiencies. And we've done so many studies like vitamin A, vitamin B, folic acid, vitamin C, vitamin D, vitamin E, omega-3 fatty acids, selenium. We've tested all of those in multi-million dollar trials, and it wasn't deficiency of vitamins that was causing cancer. And the answer came somewhere around 2000, what part of the diet was the most important. And we didn't know this really until about 2003. And it turns out that it was obesity was the biggest, biggest driver of cancer. And probably more specifically, is that it was the hyperinsulinemia. That is, the too much insulin, which is very typical of obesity, is probably the what's driving cancer in those cases. And the reason I say we didn't know is because, so I went to medical school in the mid-1990s, and we never talked about this stuff.
No.
But in 2003, a very large study came out, which showed that obesity actually raises the risk of all kinds of cancer. So now the WHO classifies 13 different types of cancer as obesity related, including breast cancer and colorectal cancer, which are, after lung cancer, sort of the most common cancers. So really, really important causes. And this is what's important is now, you know, what we're doing is we have to go past, again, so this paradigm, which gets us to evolution, which gets us to the seed and the soil, which is this sort of evolutionary ecology being the study of how the environment interacts with an individual, how you can change that environment in order to prevent cancer. And that's sort of what's sort of exciting about this, is that now hopefully we can start to understand and then make some changes that are going to minimize our risk of developing these types of cancers and, you know, hopefully preventing them in the future.
Our next featured guest on today's mini episode about cancer is Dr. Elizabeth Boehm, who I'm proud to call a colleague of mine. She's a physician and a nutritionist who practices functional medicine at the Ultra Wellness Center in Lenox, Massachusetts. Through her practice and lecturing, she's helped thousands of people achieve their goals of optimal health and wellness. By the way, also my mom, who was diagnosed of cancer, breast cancer, a few years ago, and Dr. Liz Boehm was her doctor. Dr. Liz Boehm is a part of the faculty of the Institute of Functional Medicine and has been featured on the Dr. Oz Show and in a variety of publications and media, including the Huffington Post, Chalkboard Magazine, Experience Life, and many others. She also, by the way, she has a DVD that you can stream online. It doesn't cost that much at all. It's called Breast Wellness: Tools to Prevent and Heal from Breast Cancer. My mom watched it, she loved it, and it was an important part of the education that she went on in her journey to address her breast cancer, which, by the way, she's doing great. Years later, she's in remission and doing fantastic, and Liz was a big part of that. So in the DVD, Liz explores the functional medicine approach to keeping your breast and whole body well. Just wanted to give her a little plug because it is a good DVD. We have the link in the show notes. Dr. Boehm, in this next clip, talks to us about how to create a terrain in the body where cancer is less likely to grow through specific dietary interventions and lifestyle modifications. Let's listen in. With food, you've highlighted and put a list together of some foods that seem to be superfoods when it comes to not just benefiting our body as a whole, but specifically our gut microbiome and taking good care of our bacteria, which seems like it would lower our risk of colon cancer, maybe even help us prevent it. Can you talk about some of these foods and their properties?
Absolutely. So, you know, for one superfood, right, is pomegranate. Pomegranate is rich in elagic tannins, and these are phytonutrients. So in our plant foods, we have, of course, there's vitamins and minerals, but we also have these tremendous phytonutrients. These are these components in our plant foods that have been found to have tremendous health properties in the body. And this elagic tannins found in pomegranate has been shown to increase the growth of this good bacteria called Akkermansia. And Akkermansia has been shown to lower inflammation in the gut. And actually, they've even done studies to show that when you increase Akkermansia, that can help patients do better on certain cancer therapies. So that's kind of an interesting connection as well. So really, I always encourage people, you know, pomegranate, it's a wonderful food. Choose the seed. The seed is rich in fiber also. You can get powders of pomegranate that are rich in this phytonutrient. And if you do go for the juice, you want to keep it 100%, you know, no sugar added, 100% pomegranate juice, and keep it to a low, like a quarter cup or less a day, because you don't want to get, you know, too much sugar, because that, of course, causes this whole spike in blood sugar and insulin. So that's a great superfood. And there's many others, like green tea. Green tea has been studied for a long, long time in terms of its anti-cancer properties. Green tea contains this phytonutrient called EGCG, epigallocatechin gallate. So it's phenomenal. EGCG has anti-cancerous properties because it's anti-angiogenic, meaning that it can prevent the growth of blood vessels to a cancer cell so that cancer can't grow. So it's anti-angiogenic. It also is anti-inflammatory, green tea. Really high in antioxidants, and it also can epigenetically impact the tumor suppressor gene. So we've got our genes in our body, and tumor suppressor gene, as you can imagine, is a good thing, right? It suppresses tumors. But you can epigenetically, you can influence the expression of it. You can increase the expression of this tumor suppressor gene with this EGCG found in green tea. So with green tea, we're typically recommending 2 to 4 cups a day. probably 4 cups if you're really needing to do cancer prevention. If you don't want to drink all that green tea, there are supplements. Typically 225 milligrams of EGCG is what we're often recommending. Definitely go organic whenever possible with green tea. And try different formulas. So sometimes people are like, oh, it's so bitter, I don't like it. And, you know, sometimes that's because people pour their hot, the water they put on to steep their green tea is too hot and it's more.
Or they leave it in. They leave it in too long.
Exactly. Or it's just, there's lots of different forms of green tea out there. So try different ones.
Yeah. And one thing about the tea that's becoming a lot more well known is avoid the microplastics, right? Look for tea that's in a cloth, unbleached bag, because we don't want to get this organic, beautiful green tea in our body with all the microplastics that come from these plastic linings, which is super key to, in cancer prevention.
Yeah, we thought it was so cool to have these tea bags that stood up on their own, and then we're like, that's so crazy. We're pouring hot water on this plastic tea bag. Silly, right? Not a good move. Not a good move.
So I think you were going to share another. Were you going to get into another one?
Yeah, sulforaphane is probably my favorite. It's actually a phytonutrient that I take every day as a capsule. Sulforaphane is found in your cruciferous vegetables, especially broccoli and broccoli seeds. Sulforaphane is amazing. It helps the body with production of glutathione. Glutathione is like the master antioxidant and detoxifier in the body. So it helps with prevention of cancer, helps our immune system tremendously. So sulforaphane is really the key there. It also feeds the good bacteria in the gut. Like it's been shown to feed the good bacteria in the gut. And it we know that people who eat like 1 cup of cruciferous vegetables every day have a better, they have less of the unhealthy bacteria in the gut and more of the healthy bacteria in the gut. Sulforaphane also is epigenetically increases those tumor suppressor genes as well. And it's phenomenal. So it's great antioxidant capacity, really great anti-cancer properties, and feeds all those good bacteria in the gut. So think of all of your plant foods as the prebiotics that feed the probiotics. So they feed it both because of these polyphenols or these phytonutrients in the plant foods, and they also feed it because of all the fiber.
Yeah, absolutely. There's play a huge role in that process of maintaining that good terrain that you were talking about. There's a few others that you didn't get a chance to touch on, and maybe I'll just mention them and you can just rapid fire, like give us the top line, around them. Let's talk about curcumin.
Oh, curcumin's amazing, right? It's found in your turmeric and it's really anti-inflammatory. It's got a lot of anti-inflammatory properties in it. It's been shown to decrease polyp production or cancer, those precancer polyps in the intestines in mice. So it's been shown to stop the growth of those polyps or cancers in mice. And it's, as we've known forever, it's got a lot of anti-inflammatory properties. And as we've said before, cancer likes to grow in the face of inflammation. So we're always working to create a terrain where there's lower inflammation in the body.
That's amazing. Let's talk about quercetin. It's a name that some people have heard of, but they don't really maybe know what it is or what it does in the body and where you find it.
Yeah, quercetin is, we've been talking a lot about quercetin recently because there's been some interesting research in terms of quercetin having a benefit from with COVID-19. So people who get COVID-19 don't get as sick maybe if they have more quercetin in their system. So there's been a lot of research looking at that. It has a lot of anti-inflammatory properties as well. It's a natural antihistamine, but it's you can take it as a supplement. A lot of people take quercetin as a supplement. Anywhere from 500 to 3,000 a day is typical doses. But you also find it in a lot of your plant foods: berries, capers, onions, apple peel. It's in a lot of our fruits and vegetables.
So there's so much there, but I feel like the one that we always get excited about superfoods, but it's really the day-to-day fiber that plays the biggest impact overall. And yes, you know, I think pomegranates, all these things are great, and we should be looking at ways to vary them. They're not just going to help us when it comes to reducing our risk of colon cancer. They're going to help us with all aspects. A lot of the foods that you mentioned are great for the brain. They're great for, you know, you mentioned COVID-19, you know, and reducing our risk for that. Let's come back to fiber. You know, sometimes fiber seems, people feel like they have it all figured out. And on a practical level, are there amounts in terms of either grams or serving sizes that you try to hit for fiber every day, especially as somebody who has faced a battle with, you know, cancer in the past? What do you try to shoot for, and what do you tell your patients?
Yeah, so with fiber, we always want people to get at least 35 grams of fiber a day. But sometimes people are like, well, what does that mean? You know, what does that mean? So we kind of go over, okay, what is fiber? So, you know, what foods are rich in fiber? Beans and legumes are really rich in fiber. Of course, whole grains are rich in fiber. Ground flaxseed is a wonderful fiber source, also rich in omega-3 fats. Nuts and seeds are rich in fiber. So, and all of your vegetables and fruits are rich in fiber. So what we work on with people is getting more plant foods into their day. So another way that you can think about it is you want 8 to 12 servings of those phytonutrients in your day. So 8 to 12 servings of the vegetables, fruits, spices, and teas. Those are all those phytonutrients. We always say to people, eat from the rainbow. I always say eat from the rainbow, meaning that you want to get something that's red in color naturally, something that's orange, yellow, blue, green, white and tan, you know, every day, something from every color of the rainbow. And variety is great. This is a way that you can ensure that you're getting a lot of these different diverse phytonutrients in your diet and lots of fiber.
By reshaping our view of cancer as an internal uprising of our own healthy cells, we can begin to take back control. The seed of cancer may exist in all of us, but the power to change the soil is in our hands. Thanks for tuning in to this week's mini episode of the Broken Brain Podcast. I really appreciate you listening. If you want to make somebody's day, send this episode to someone you love or even someone you like. We'll see you next week. Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the interview. Just a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. This podcast is not, I repeat, it's not a substitute for professional care by a doctor or otherwise qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help in your journey, seek out a qualified medical practitioner. If you're looking for a functional medicine practitioner, you can visit ifm.org and search there, find a provider database. It's important that you have somebody in your corner that's qualified, that's trained, that's a licensed healthcare practitioner helping you make changes, especially when it comes to your health.